This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Like, he's not living in the real world, which we've known for a long time, but to pull this out to make him sound human is just like, what the hell? You know, that they would sit there and blast music just like, you know, a loving couple would do. That's,
well, they were together for a long time before Lori entered the picture. So, I mean, it's not like they sat there and he was like plotting to kill her for 15 or 20, however long they were together. They were together for a long time. So, I mean, I could see there being, you know, a good point in the relationship before everything went to hell and Lori gets involved, where they're jamming out to Depeche Mode, Oingo Boingo, B-52s, and Keen. Whitney comes up in one of the next letters, by the way.
Oh, I can't wait for that. We can't play any Whitney, I'm assuming, right?
What's that?
We can't play any.
No, we don't want to do that. We'll get flagged. And,
damn it.
But I can sing it. I can. If anyone wants to make a request, I'll be happy to break into it.
I'll have some ready for you.
I'll give some renditions. Yeah, we'll do the karaoke version and be like, I want to dance with somebody. It'll be great.
nostalgic take, though, on their loving marriage. It just
weird.
Makes them sick. Yeah.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Okay. What if Chad didn't do any of it? Like, what if Chad is just the moron that sat there, watched his wife get murdered under the hands of Alex Cox and Lori Vallow? Like, what if Lori and Alex were behind all of this and Chad is just too stupid? Not that he wasn't aware that shit was going down, right? And like people were dying around him, but what if he was a bystander, whipped, yes, but also not raising his hand and saying, this is not okay. And to go on knowing the kids are dead in the backyard, right? Or did he just believe that they were somewhere else and just went with whatever Lori said to him?
You know, you've got to be really careful when you hand your heart over to somebody, because if you are so enamored by this person and so taken with them, oh, I pray to God that they're a good person for you. Because if not, if you are that wrapped up in it, you could end up like Chad Daybell. I mean, that's a very real theory that you're talking about, that he was so intertwined with her that he couldn't see anything that she was doing as wrong. He saw it. It didn't look right, but he trusted her so much.
Yeah. It was like this blind faith that he had for, yeah. I don't know. I mean, because if you look at the evidence, yes, the bodies were found in his backyard without a doubt, but Alex Cox was there when the bodies were being buried. I mean, he's the one that seems to have phone ping. Alex is the one who has like physical location data putting him where everybody died. So it seems like Alex was thoroughly involved. Was Alex involved with Chad though? Like, were they doing this together? Or, you know, did Alex sneak into their house or something and kill Tammy? Because there were strangulation marks on Tammy of asphyxiation. And so that's the big question there. And that's, I think, what makes a lot of people, including myself, think Chad did that. Chad was part of that, because they originally ruled her death natural causes, and they had to exhume her body to actually, then they realized there was asphyxiation. But was it Chad? Was it Alex Cox? Was it Lori wanting Chad and carrying all of this out through Alex Cox, and Chad's just the doof that's sitting there? Oh, she died of natural causes. Your kids, they're missing. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're zombies. You found another place for them to go. They're not in my backyard, melted in, you know, Home Depot buckets. I wonder how much he knew of what they were doing, or if he was part of what they were doing. I don't know the answer to that at the end of the day. He's certainly guilty as shit and needs to be put away, because he at least had some sort of knowledge that things were really fucked up here. But I do wonder how much he actually had a hand in the murders, physically carrying them out. Not knowledge, but actually chopping up the bodies, that sort of stuff.
It's a really good question.
I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of DNA in this case where like Chad's DNA is like on any sort of murder. I mean, as far as I remember, I don't believe there was. if I'm wrong on this, and somebody in the comments here has another, like, what about this? Glad to hear it, because I'm doing my own searches as we're doing this and trying to remember all the details of this case. But there really is, I think, somewhat of an argument to be made that maybe Chad is not the one who committed the murders or planned the murders, but was there in some way, shape, or form a participant, but maybe not in the way we think. I don't know.
They were pulling the strings. He was the puppet.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe at some point he just lost all ability to make decisions for himself.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many weird aspects to Chad Daybell, and that's where the way, because he just listened to him. He's never come across as the guy that's capable of doing this shit. Of like, I'm gonna go, you know, slaughter these two children in my backyard, burn them, and bury their bodies.
Yeah,
it just doesn't. He doesn't strike me as the Alex. Yeah, Lori. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know. I wonder how much of just a total oaf he was.
Well, I don't know. I think he was a big oaf. I think like you said, he might have just been a moron, and that's a real possibility, that he just didn't have agency in this relationship, and he was so whipped.
Yeah.
That he just couldn't step back and go, "Okay, my woman's nuts. I got to shut this shit down." He just went,
the little missus wants to do this.
Like, these letters do not justify anything. And in no way do I think he's an innocent human being. It's another way of looking at this case, because what's on the surface isn't always what's real. Even though some people get convicted of this or that, it doesn't always mean that that's exactly how things went down.
Yeah.
And and there's so many twists to this case. I do wonder. I think it's worth asking the question just to examine the answer. Let's listen to one more of these today. There's two more after this, and we'll do them tomorrow. And bonus, the Elena, what was it? The Elena and what's letter?
I looked them up. Hang on.
Chat.
Not chat. Hang on. I looked them up. I'm printing them off. It is James.
James and Elena, this is the loin fire letters, where the spontaneous combustion of the loin or whatever he said.
Yeah.
We're going to put that in Chad's voice as well. We've done dramatic readings of that on the program in the past. We're going to have Chad read it next. So that'll be coming up later in the week as well. So you don't want to miss that. So press subscribe. Let's now take a listen to Chad Daybell's third letter from prison, hear more about his musical taste, his book reviews, and more about life, it sounds like, of moving to Rexburg, Idaho with Tammy. Let's take a listen.
My previous letter concluded with Tammy and I moving with our children from Utah to Idaho in 2015, and I will continue from that point. We bought a home north of Rexburg in an area known as Salem. Our children were enrolled at either Brigham Young University, Idaho, or Sugar-Salem High School, and they made some wonderful friends. Tammy also flourished in our new surroundings. She loved the rural lifestyle with plenty of property to create her own little farm. She'd always had a soft spot in her heart for animals, but in Springville, we'd had a small yard that limited the types of pets we could have. However, soon after we arrived in Idaho, Tammy began to assemble an ever-growing family of pets, including chickens, pigeons, cats, a rabbit, and of course, Tammy's favorite pet, Indian runner ducks. She named them all and enjoyed caring for them. She also created several garden areas around the property she would carefully maintain. After moving to Idaho, Tammy and I stayed busy running our publishing company. I was the president and editor-in-chief, while she was the vice president and chief financial officer. I was also making good money writing a weekly online column, along with receiving royalties on my published books. We felt blessed. So Tammy didn't need to work beyond her company duties, but several years earlier in Springville, she had taken a part-time position as the computer lab teacher at our children's elementary school. She loved working with the students, and the job was very rewarding to her. When we prepared to move to Idaho, Tammy looked for a similar position, and she was hired as the assistant librarian at Madison Middle School in Rexburg. She was later hired as the librarian at Central Elementary in Sugar City, which was much closer to our home. She also took on the task of creating a computer lab at the school, modeled after the one she'd had in Springville. I would visit Tammy at the elementary school every couple of weeks, and I helped her out during open house events such as Back to School Night. It was fun to be greeted by the students as Mrs. Daybell's husband. Tammy had always strived to be physically fit, and in Idaho, she turned part of our front room into her workout area. She enjoyed doing yoga, and she liked to play several exercise video games such as Just Dance, Walk It Out, and Exerbeat. It wasn't until the final year of her life that she started having noticeable physical setbacks. She caught a cold during the holidays, and she battled chest congestion and a deep cough throughout early 2019. She was also experiencing menopause symptoms with regular hot flashes. She was now 48, but she said she felt she had aged 10 years in just a few months. Her exercise routine faded away, and she became content to just sit on the couch, watch TV, and work on her laptop. My children and I encouraged Tammy to visit her doctor for a full health exam, but she resisted going. She had grown up with a firm belief in using holistic medicine and natural healing remedies to regain her health. I had seen these methods produce many positive effects over the years, with Tammy having rapid recoveries. But this time seemed different, as if something had shifted within her body. I regret not being more insistent in having her get a physical exam, because there were four major reasons for concern, and they all got worse as 2019 progressed. First, there were Tammy's lengthy colds and prolonged coughing fits. Second were her lethargy and overall lack of energy. This wasn't the same woman who could work in the garden and care for her animals all evening without stopping. She began using the phrase, need to sit down, almost daily after any sustained physical activity. The third reason for concern were her swollen joints and bloating in her abdomen. Tammy initially tried to brush off these symptoms as temporary water retention, but they never went away. One day she came up to me and partially lifted her shirt. She grabbed hold of her belly and said, "Look at this. I can almost hear my gut sloshing around." Around that same time, Tammy and my son attended a health wellness fair. They were examined by a nurse who was bothered by how swollen Tammy's legs were and that she had developed varicose veins. The nurse urged her to see a doctor about it, but Tammy refused. She finally admitted that her condition might be more serious when she called me into the bedroom one afternoon. I found her sitting on the edge of the bed, wiping away tears from her eyes. It was late August 2019, and the new school year was about to begin. As she sat on the bed, she had a pair of pants halfway up her legs. She said, "These pants fit me just fine at the end of the school year. Now I can't even get them over my hips." She stood up and demonstrated to me in frustration. None of her other school pants fit either. We went to the store the next day to buy replacements, and she ended up having to go up two pant sizes. She was very discouraged about it, and she eventually resorted to wearing full-length skirts most of the time to school. The fourth cause of concern was a series of fainting spells. Tammy felt her equilibrium was being affected, as well as her stamina. It wasn't unusual to find her in the kitchen with both hands on the counter with her head down. She would say, "I'm okay, I'm just a little dizzy." Tammy's first major fainting incident happened in April 2019. She had finished putting the animals away for the night, and as she crossed the back driveway, she blacked out and crashed forward onto the asphalt, injuring her wrist. She came into the house and explained what happened, saying her wrist might be broken. I urged her to go to the emergency room, but she refused. She took an herbal remedy instead, and the pain went away in a few days. That summer, we went to the LDS temple, and during one of the ceremonies, Tammy fainted, collapsed backward, and then threw up all over the front of her dress. She was very embarrassed as the temple's medical team rushed into the room to care for her. In September, she essentially repeated her fall in the back driveway. She fell in almost the exact spot and re-injured her wrist. This time she didn't object when I insisted on taking her to the doctor, who prescribed pain medication and gave her a wrist brace to help heal the damage. I suggested she take a couple of school sick days to recuperate, but she shook her head and said, "No way. You know how much I hate a substitute messing up the library. I'll just sit there if I have to." From that day on, the setbacks came more frequently. Her nose was running constantly, and she would have sneezing fits. She also began to complain she was having out-of-body experiences. She described how her spirit would hover above her body for a few seconds at a time. In early October, one of those incidents happened while I was in the living room and she was in the kitchen. I suddenly heard a loud crash, and I rushed into the kitchen to find Tammy had actually fainted into the open fridge. She had landed hard against one of the shelves and was slumped down in the bottom half. I helped her stand up and told her I was very worried about her. She just waved her hand and asked me to help her lay down on the couch. The day before she passed away, she came home completely worn out from setting up the displays for the school's upcoming book fair. That evening, she told family members she wasn't feeling well and later had a bad coughing fit before throwing up. We went to sleep, and when I woke the next morning, she had passed away. I will describe that terrible morning and subsequent events in a future letter. But as word spread of her death, everyone was devastated because she had been such a powerful, wonderful influence to so many people. We all feel that loss every day. I miss her and love her. Tammy was a true angel on earth, and I know she is still watching over our family. My children and I have felt her presence many times since her death. We sense she is particularly interested in her precious grandchildren. We believe families can be together forever in heaven, and although she has moved on ahead of us, we know we will be reunited with her someday. Bookshelf.
Bookshelf.
Members of the LDS Church seek to find their ancestors because we believe that if people don't learn about the gospel of Jesus Christ in this life, they will have the opportunity to do so in the spirit world after they die. We believe they will be able to reunite with their loved ones there and live as families in heaven. That's why the LDS Church builds beautiful temples across the world so gospel ordinances can be performed in behalf of our ancestors. Throughout the 1990s, that was a key focus for us and our extended family members. We completed the temple work for hundreds of ancestors over a period of years. Then later on, we discovered that a woman named Rachel Marler had been overlooked in our records. Several years had passed since the temple work had been done for Rachel's parents and siblings, and we sensed she was very anxious to join her family in paradise. We submitted Rachel's name for temple work, and when family members performed ordinances in Rachel's behalf, they could feel her presence in the temple as if she was watching them take place. The unusual part came 2 days later when Rachel appeared to Tammy's grandma, Lucille. Rachel stood at the end of Lucille's bed as a spirit dressed in white, and she told Lucille how grateful she was that she could now join her family in paradise. One interesting fact is that soon after Rachel visited Lucille, we found an actual photo of her taken in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Lucille saw the photo and verified that the woman in the photo was the same woman who had appeared to her in her bedroom. That is why when I wrote Chasing Paradise, the main family has the last name of Marlar, and why Lucille plays a key role. As I wrote the novel, it evolved into a full-blown adventure that takes place both on Earth and in the spirit world as a young woman seeks to reunite with her family in paradise.
Oh, my God.
Musical note. Tammy and I enjoyed taking our kids on several day trips each year. One memorable trip was when we decided to visit the city of Preston, where the ultimate Idaho movie, Napoleon Dynamite, was filmed. Our family has watched the film often enough that we can quote the dialogue by heart. For this little adventure, Tammy printed off an online guide and map that showed the locations where key scenes took place. We drove slowly past the downtown landmarks, then stopped to take photos next to Napoleon's tetherball pole. Finally, we began our quest to find the Dynamite family home. It was surprisingly quite a ways out of town, but we found it, growing up, the song Private Idaho by the B-52s was my main connection to the Gem State. But that song is clearly not a fair representation of the lifestyle or the musical tastes of Eastern Idaho, where Rexburg is located. A better fit is Tim McGraw's Where the Green Grass Grows. Just replace the line about his brain popping up in rows with spuds, and it works. I love driving in my truck along the Fremont County back roads with the windows rolled down, potato fields on every side, and the Grand Tetons in the distance. I just remembered one detail. It snows about 9 months of the year, but we certainly stayed busy during the winter. Our youngest son was in the high school pep band and was also a star in the school musical, and it was fun to watch him as we sat among our friends and neighbors. I also enjoyed cheering for the Sugar Salem athletic teams. Then the snow would melt for a while, and we would explore the outdoors, such as Mesa Falls, or float down the Henry's Fork River.
That where it ends?
That's where it ends.
Oh, shit. I got to take a look at that. Feels like it got cut or something. Tim McGraw, Where the Green Grass Grows, adding to the playlist.
I'm a huge Napoleon Dynamite fan, so now I feel a little conflicted.
Yeah, I mean, you...
Gosh, Tina!
Now you got a whole new way of looking at it. Picture Chad Daybell standing in front of the house on the tetherball pole with Indian runner ducks standing by Tammy. Yeah. I don't know. There was a comment that was made, you know, he was a fiction writer, so he could be, you know, not that he was a good fiction writer, his books are horrible, but I mean, this could be it certainly could easily be a work of fiction, but I am curious, like every letter, we're getting to learn a little bit more about what actually, in his words, happened in that room. I mean, he says he went to bed, woke up the next morning, and she's dead. So when did someone come in and asphyxiate her if it wasn't him? You know?
Yeah, it leaves a lot of time, doesn't it?
I don't know how it couldn't have been him. And I think that's why he was, you know, brought up on the charges that he was. I mean, unless he took some Ambien and then Alex came in at night with a pillow and just like, I don't know.
If the loved one in your life was dealing with, and I realize some people don't believe less in modern medicine and Western medicine and all that kind of stuff. But at some point, if someone you're with is that sick,
yeah,
don't you just say, listen, enough's enough. I love you and I appreciate your thought process, but I'm sorry. You are going in. We're gonna figure out what's going on with you.
I'm not going to get real personal here, but listening to Chad talk about, to me, what sounds like she had some concurrent symptoms of severe menopause and then something else on top of it.
Yeah, it could be like a thyroid disorder or something that could be very, very easily helped.
Right, correct. So something going on there that was undiagnosed properly. I'm just saying properly, and this is my own view. But I went through something very similar to this. I'm going to tread lightly here. I'm not going to say I didn't get a lot of support, but felt very on my own. With a lot of it. So hearing him talk about how he understood what she was going through, I actually felt like he was being quite compassionate. It was a very weird, God, he's talking about her like he truly cares is concerned.
But is it afterward though? Like, was he really that way in person, or is this the after effect of him writing about how concerned he was?
Correct. And that's where the weirdness comes in. I'm not sure if it's just him being the fiction writer, making the story sound good. And he was really a piece of shit during her time when she needed some support. I don't know. But I could relate for a few minutes. Like, even Chad Daybell was.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to respect someone else's opinions, or like, you can do what you want with your own body. That's bottom line. But I could, you know, if you're with somebody and they're clearly having health issues and they're remedies or solutions are not doing anything for them, but they're still believing in them, it would be really hard to be on the other side and be like, look, this could be helped. Your own belief system is not right It's not fixing anything. So as much as you want to believe this is helping you, this could probably give you a better shot at it. But at the end of the day, it's up to that individual what they want to do with their own health. But I could see that being very frustrated. Like, I mean, I would certainly, you know, at the end of the day, it's their choice, but I would certainly be like, then what happens to you is on you at some point. when you can get the help that you need, you're choosing not to.
You know, here's the other aspect, and I don't want to pull the woman card here, but having hit menopause, like going 90 miles an hour into a brick wall, and not getting support from a lot of sides, including my physician, who completely gaslit me and told me that it was just anxiety and depression. It's really hard in that moment to act rationally and really figure out what you need to do to make your life better. So I totally understand. I mean, you come across as being absolutely batshit crazy during that time, especially if you're not getting the help that you need.
Well, and you're hearing 50 different things from different people, like this one saying this one saying that. And honestly, I mean, and honestly, sometimes you need to have a physician where the previous patient, the answer may have simply been anxiety and depression. Correct. And the next one, and it presents the same way. You know, it might be something where it's like, well, this is what we think it may be. It's not that they're perfect at answering those questions, but they're doing, you know, the best that they can based on the information they have. But clearly, with something like this where it keeps going, it's almost like there was this feeling of they were okay if she died. She was okay if she died, rather than actually trying to find a solution. But if you think, you know, I can't imagine what life in the Chad Daybell household was like, where death might not have been a little more pleasant of an idea than continuing to be married to that fucker. You know, I mean, because we're hearing the sugar-coated version of it right now. When you celebrate death as being much better than anything you're doing in the living world, and this is how you live your life, death becomes a viable option, even when it probably shouldn't be. Yeah.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.